Good morning. We're talking about jobs today. And yesterday, the Democrats pulled no punches.
150,000 people, approximately, have been hurt as a result of the intransigence of the Republicans this past 3 weeks.
That was Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid of Nevada on the Senate floor yesterday. He was talking about a Democratic plan that would have saved 150,000 Americans from losing their unemployment benefits over the past 3 weeks if they'd acted on this proposal earlier. And we're joined now by Todd Zwillig, Takeaway Washington correspondent. Good morning, Todd.
Hi, good morning, Celeste.
So this was a major hurdle, right, for the Democrats, a huge victory?
Yeah, well, Harry Reid's overstating it a bit, as majority leaders often do. This is an extension of unemployment insurance benefits. You know, when the economy went south, Congress extended UI benefits for people who lose their jobs. These are federal benefits. Those are going to expire. So the House and Senate has been at work to extend those even more. And they're still going to get that after this procedural vote yesterday. But they would have gotten a lot more if not for all the partisan bickering that's been going on around this. What a bipartisan group of senators was trying to do, in addition to these UI benefits, was extend the $8,000 first-time home buyer tax credit. That may expire now. There were tax breaks for small businesses to hire more workers and to save money during the holiday season, hopefully preserving jobs. Republicans wanted other amendments on things like ACORN and things like illegal immigration. They just couldn't reach an agreement. So all of that other stuff that would have been good for home buyers and workers and businesses has fallen by the wayside, and now you're left with just the extension of UI benefits. Somewhere between 14 and 20 weeks is where it's going to land, depending on what the House and Senate agree to. So they could have gotten a lot more, but they got just the unemployment insurance extension for people who've lost their jobs.
Well, I imagine for the people who are getting unemployment benefits, that's enough. That's Todd Zwillig, Takeaways Washington correspondent. But we are talking about jobs a lot today, and obviously jobs is on the minds of a lot of Americans. But there's also an attitude among many Americans that if they are going to get a job, they don't want to see foreign companies coming up and buying American properties. There's a lot of talk about saving American jobs. And during the Cash for Clunkers, we saw a lot of people talking about buying American cars. We're joined now by Micheline Maynard, senior business reporter for The New York Times. And her new book is called The Selling of the American Economy, How Foreign Companies Are Remaking the American Dream. It's in bookstores now. And we're rejoined by Amy Lindsay, production team member in Toyota's Body Welding. She joins us from the Toyota factory in Princeton, Indiana. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Celeste.
I found very interesting about your book, Mickey, is you started out by talking about this idea that foreign investment in the United States is not new. Foreign companies have owned property, they've owned factories, they've employed American workers as far back as the United States has been in existence, and even during the time when we were just the colonies.
That's right. I mean, if you go back, the original foreign investors were the Dutch and the English, right, who came over here to settle. And then, seriously, through the 1700s, through the 1800s, the railroads, the mines in Upper Michigan, banks in New York, many, many businesses were foreign investment. In fact, foreign investment helped save General Motors in 1920 after World War I, when it was having trouble getting back on its feet.
But this idea that we have to save American companies and American plants and these things that are American institutions that people feel so emotionally connected to, when did this passionate antipathy towards foreign companies, when did that begin to develop?
You know, it goes in waves. And around World War I, there was a really passionate feeling against the German companies. In World War II, against German and Japanese companies. In the 70s, especially against Japanese automakers. You know, against the Chinese as recently as just a couple of years ago in a big oil deal. So it pops up, and I think one of the reasons is fear. I think people see foreign invaders and they don't know that it can have positive ramifications for Americans.
Well, let's talk about one positive ramification, which is Amy working at a Toyota plant in Indiana. Amy, you went from the Estee Lauder makeup counter to working on the plant, and in effect, you didn't get the job at Toyota. This was a job that you very, very energetically sought, and it took you a little bit to get it, right?
It did. I went through the first process, and you actually went through 3 days of work where you were actually simulated to be on the line before you ever got to fill out an application.
They were trying to see if you would last doing the repetitive work.
Exactly.
And you did.
Well, I did, yes. My best friends thought I wouldn't last 2 months, and I've been here 7 years. You know, so far, so good.
I've been to a lot of these plants around the country, Nissan, Honda, and the workers are very, very happy. They love having these jobs. These are typically non-union shops, though, so it's a little different than the typical manufacturing in the United States. How much of your book tells the story of permanent changes going on in the economy that bring in foreign investors, that maybe push out other jobs, but that really tell the story of the changing economy that's not going to be like it was for your mom and dad?
At this point, I don't think it's a question of pushing out other jobs. Jobs have left. American companies have outsourced, and they're chasing lower labor rates. And what they're missing is the ingenuity and the hard work ethic of Americans.
They're missing Amy.
Well, they are. And, you know, Amy has a great story about her father who fought in World War II against the Japanese. Isn't that right?
That is correct. He was a disabled World War II veteran. And, you know, my concern was that I was going to go to work for a Japanese company. So I asked him if that bothered him at all. And he said, absolutely not. I am so proud of you and so proud of the fact that Toyota came down here offering people great paying jobs in this area that Ford and GM didn't come down and offer.
Mickey, explain to me, we do have so many American companies saying, look, in order to compete, we have to bring our labor costs down. That's why we're outsourcing. It's a necessity. If that is the case, why do foreign investors come in and purchase plants here and employ these supposedly overpaid American workers?
Well, first of all, if you're working in Europe, our labor costs are lower than Europe. So Mercedes-Benz, BMW, those companies, Volkswagen coming over here, these are lower labor costs for them. Second, the governors of these states, even Michigan, are offering incentives to these companies to come. They wipe, they give them tax incentives, they build roads, they provide other things like that. So when they come, it's a deal that they couldn't get at home, and it's a deal that's too good to resist.
They sometimes hand them parcels of land and clear the way completely to get them to come in. And one thing that you point out in your book is that someone like Amy, although she's working in a non-union shop, is actually benefiting from the work the UAW is doing at the Big Three. She's benefiting from that. How does that work?
Well, that's very true. And what's happened in wage rates, for example, is people in Kentucky and Indiana are earning, you know, in the mid-20s range. Down in Texas, they're not getting that. But the UAW plants that are still paying full wages are paying about $28 an hour. So it's sort of like
balloon effect.
Exactly. You know, it sort of floats the boat a little bit. But in parts of the country where you don't have a sort of a UAW presence, then the wages tend to be lower
because they're not afraid
and there's also not any chance they're going to be organized.
You know, Mickey, in the old days, Henry Ford created the innovation of the assembly line that sort of defined manufacturing in the United States. Your book also tells the story of America has lost its leadership role as an innovator in the manufacturing process itself. We don't make good factories anymore.
We do make good factories, but we've been inspired by the things that we've seen from foreign manufacturers. I mean, Toyota is a great example of that. Boeing actually studied Toyota to learn how to build its airplanes more efficiently. But those innovations do come here. Toyota has brought its body welding system to the United States. And I've just fascinated by it. I've been in 95 factories, and I think it's amazing when you see these processes come from overseas to our shores.
Another interesting point that you make in your book is that they're actually building research and development facilities in the United States. And you talk about this as this kind of meeting of the minds that all of the American factories and research and development guys can kind of help each other and spur more inspiration because of the close competition and close collaborations.
Right. EADS, which is the owner of Airbus, the first thing they did, even before they bid on this tanker contract with the Pentagon, $35 billion contract to build refueling planes, they opened an engineering center in Mobile, Alabama. So there's 2,000 people there who are working for EADS, whether or not they get the big contract.
Amy, do you have a name for the robots that you work with?
My gosh, I don't, but they are fascinating.
Amy,
I love to get to watch them.
Let's end with you, Amy. What do you say for all the many unemployed people out there? Can you give them some reassurance on not to be afraid of foreign employers?
Oh, not at all. I mean, Toyota gives so much back to just even the local community, not only from the incomes we make going back into local stores, local businesses, but the volunteer opportunities that Toyota gives us as well. Right now we're doing things for the Salvation Army, our local United Way. So we give back in many, many ways.
And that's true about among the entire auto industry. They're actually quite generous workers. That's Amy Lindsay. She joined us from the Indiana Toyota plant in Princeton. She moved from the Estee Lauder makeup counter to the production. She actually drives around delivering parts on the factory floor, Amy Lindsay. And Mickey Maynard joins us. She's the senior business reporter for the New York Times. Her new book is called The Selling of the American Economy. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Michael.
Congrats.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot. There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.